So I've been here for a couple of 2 weeks now. This is the third week. And we're speaking over these 4 weeks of the four Brahma Viharas, the four divine abodes. So what I'd like to do is a quick summary and moving into appreciative joy. Sympathetic joy. That's our main theme or energy for this evening. But a little review is important because appreciative joy literally depends on a strong foundation of loving kindness and compassion. So proceed with a little review and maybe some reflections. And I don't know, sometimes I think I put things together and then I think it might work out better if I just threw them up in the air and pulled them off and shuffled them, you know. But in any case, so I just reshuffled them all. Some verses I think just are appropriate at this time. The anniversary of 4 years of war and so forth. Some of the words of the Buddha: hatred never ends through hatred. By non-hatred alone does it end. This is eternal truth. Victory gives birth to hate. The defeated sleep tormented. Giving up both victory and defeat, the peaceful sleep delighted. All tremble at violence. All fear death. Having likened others to yourself, don't kill or cause others to kill. If you surveyed the entire world, you'd find no one more dear than yourself. And since each person is most dear to themselves, may those who love themselves not bring harm to anyone. The person who day and night delights in harmlessness and has loving kindness toward all beings is the one who has no hate for anyone. In verses like that show us how all of these teachings are interwoven and the cultivation of loving kindness and compassion and the cultivation of mindfulness and wisdom and insight and so forth, that all of these form a woven cloth of a complete transformation of being in the world in a completely different way experientially. So I love to reflect on some of those verses. And then for the four Brahma Viharas, they're sometimes called the divine abidings. And if only I could sing or chant, I would chant this for you. Some of you may have been to Amaravati or an Amaravati monastery or retreats with Amaravati monastics, and so you may have in the morning or late evening chanted the verse called the suffusion with the divine abidings. So I always kind of think like with herbal infusions, you know, suffusing with divine abidings. So as I read the verse, you'll see loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity expressed through the verse. May I abide in well-being, in freedom from affliction, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may I maintain well-being in myself. May everyone abide in well-being, in freedom from hostility, in freedom from ill will, in freedom from anxiety, and may they maintain well-being in themselves. May all beings be released from all suffering, and may they not be parted from the good fortune they have attained. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. All actions with intention, be they skillful or harmful, of such acts, they will be the heirs. So the wish that all beings have happiness, all beings be free of suffering, and the celebration of the success and happiness of others. That's the strengthening of loving kindness, compassion, and mudita, sympathetic joy or appreciative joy. And then next week we'll work with this final verse. When they act upon intention, all beings are the owners of their action and inherit its results. Their future is born from such action, companion to such action, and its results will be their home. So part of the practices of cultivating intentionally loving kindness and compassion and appreciative joy and equanimity is to actually change the activity of our heart and our mind, so that if our actions are what cause the things that we experience, which makes perfect sense when you think about it, right? And if thinking and feeling are activities, and if we are caught in sort of habitual conditioning, just habits of mind and heart set in motion, if we don't believe in previous lives, we certainly are able to reflect on our young years and then the subsequent years, seeing habits of thought and feeling of heart and mind set in motion and just continuing in an unconscious, subconscious, habitual way. If that's the case, then we can now intentionally sort of move into that stream of habitual conditioning with alternative thought and feeling, and thus set in motion causes and conditions which will give rise to very different results. If we're the heirs of our thoughts and our feelings, then if we set new ones in motion, thoughts of loving kindness, feelings of compassion, and developing the ability to appreciate the joy and happiness of others, the results of that, the results of those actions, are so wholesome. The Buddha has said that that they are brighter than any of the stars. They compare the merit that one receives from loving kindness, loving friendliness, is as there's as big a difference in that, between that and other acts of goodness, as there is between the light of the full moon and the light of stars in the sky. So the power of loving kindness, loving friendliness, compassion, the power of these moments of intentional cultivating and then expressing loving kindness, compassion, and appreciation is enormous, and can be experienced in our lives, can be experienced in the changes in our lives. And I think last week I promised to bring the list of the benefits, the formal list in the scriptures of the benefits of loving kindness, cultivating loving kindness, which is you will sleep easily, you will wake easily, you will have pleasant dreams, people will love you, devas, which are angelic beings, celestial beings, devas and animals will love you, devas will protect you, external dangers will not harm you, your face will be radiant, your mind will be serene, you will die unconfused, and you will be reborn in happy realms. And we can apply this just to one night. You'll fall asleep unconfused and you'll wake up in a happy mood. So experiment also with that, for sure, in terms of sleepless nights, if you to do the loving kindness before sleep or when you wake up in the middle of the night, and then see how that works. Just can run an experiment, see what happens in terms of sleep, dream, in terms of the mood of waking up. The teaching says that of these four immeasurables, actually, appreciative joy, mudita, is the most difficult to develop. And that's because it is so tangled up in the self. I mean, not mudita, but the opposite of mudita. The lack of mudita is so tangled up in the concepts, the ideas, the feeling of self, so that what arises for us is self-centered behavior and self-oriented behavior. And then looking at others, there's a lot of comparison, tremendous amount of judging that goes on, and we want to come out somehow on top of that when looking at others. There can be qualities of demeaning others, envy, jealousy, those sorts of competitive kinds of behaviors and so forth. So all of those, and oddly enough, though it makes sense when you think about it, boredom itself block the experience of appreciative joy. So that it makes sense. It's harder to develop. But it's actually just quite wonderful to develop it. And it arises on the strength of loving kindness and compassion. So if we can't, if we don't feel like we can experience, or we do experience too much joy, or that we even get it, that we even know what that means or feels like, we can be confident then that if we just keep practicing with the loving kindness and the compassion practices, and of course on the other side our mindfulness and our insight practice, that joy will come. Joy will develop from those qualities. So you can take it as a direct practice. We did a little piece in the guided meditation, and I'll talk about it a little more. But also know that if it just isn't, you just don't quite get it right now or feel it or want to spend time with that practice, loving kindness, compassion, and mindfulness insight practice result in more and more of that sort of experience, and also the ability to feel appreciative joy. And that's because, how to say it, of our practices, the mindfulness, the insight practice, the loving kindness, the compassion, you know, they're all just little picking away at this solidified notion of self. The me, you know, the ongoing inner dialogue. This is who I am. This is how I feel. This is what I like. This is what happened to me today. This is who I am. This is how I feel. This is what I like. This is what happened to me today. Just on and on and on. There's the wonderful Zen verse, caught in a self-centered dream, only suffering. And I think the next line, holding to self-centered views, exactly the dream. A couple of other lines. But our mindfulness practice, our insight practice, helping us to, it's odd, it's pulling apart something that was never there to begin with, but the illusory solidity, the thing that what has happened to us is that over time the solidifying of an illusion. It's fun that we have things like theater and movies and things like that because they show us certain things. There was that state of movies for a while when cartoon characters were sort of becoming part of the quote-unquote real world, which is actually the movie world, but that was kind of the plot. In a way, one could imagine, how would you explain to, if a cartoon character could show up, how would we explain to that character that they didn't actually exist? You know? They were just a Disney character or something like that. And it would sort of be a crushing blow to them, you know? It would be hard. It would be difficult. Well, that's really what our whole practice, the mindfulness and loving kindness teaching us to extend our hearts to others, and then compassion practices. It's all trying to tell us that this whole solidity, this self, this me that I experience so deeply really wasn't ever there. So it's a little bit, I don't know, one comparison. So many people will try to find a comparison or a notion that will help us understand this. But you know little flip books? You know how you can make a little series of drawings and on enough pieces of paper and then you move it, which is, of course, how movies were developed, films. So there's this illusion. Say we have a flip book with a character moving along. That's actually what we are. We're just this flip book moving very, very fast. And so we are under the illusion that we exist. You know, I tell you, I was born, I have the whole story. You know, I was born in 1949 in Chicago. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. My mother was Irish. My father's Bohemian. I have a brother. I have a sister. Da-da-da-da-da-da. This whole, but really, it's all just moments. They're just moments. This moment. This moment. This moment. This moment. But because of this strange world, karma, the illusion of time, and so forth, we're kind of like a flip book, moving along. The moments are moving along so quickly, and we're not paying any attention at all. So we appear to be in an existence with an identity and a narrative and a story, and there appears to be others and so forth. Well, then when we start to explore this, and of course, people, the first piece of feedback is, but if there's no self, what's this happening to, you know, and so forth. So that kind of panic and trying to understand this and that. So just to give you another angle, it takes time and practice and study and practice, but over time, one begins to get a feeling of this. But let me give you another alternative, really fun notion about this. that you can just plant for future reference, which is, if this solidity, this sense, the flip book feeling of oneness, person in motion, if we can stop it, and let's just even take the binder off and just throw the pages of the flip book all over here, what we're actually left with, as I said, they're just moments of moments and moments, but what the moments are pure joy. That's what the moments are. If one can finally deconstruct and let go of the ego, the self, and so forth, what actually arises, what that's been blocking, is pure joy. And if we can get to the experience where we can just experience just this moment, I mean, why do you think Thich Nhat Hanh's always going around saying, present moment, only moment, and recommending that people live there? Not because it's boring, not because it's painful, not because it's difficult, not because there's an angst of non-existence or an existential torment of non-existence, but that moment, that present moment, is pure joy. Pure joy. So, who wouldn't trade their self? I'll trade the whole story for pure joy. Moments of pure joy. I mean, why not? So that's a little bit of the aspect of our path that we're on, actually. If we're wondering where this is going, the spiritual path and the practice and so forth, one of the ways to describe it is moments, actually moments of peace, and moments of joy, moments of ease, moments of joy. Just moments, pure, arising one after the other, without the burden of this self-centered narrative, the self-centered storyline that we tend to drag around with us and assert at every opportunity. So that's pretty good. That's a pretty good trade, I think. There's a few verses on joy from the Dhammapada. Never feeling enmity towards those who bear us malice, how wonderful our lives become, free from enemies, even in the midst of the most inimical. Never harming those who would hurt us, how wonderful our lives become. Never harmed, even in the midst of harmful people. Never feeling selfish, even in the midst of selfish people, how wonderful our lives become. Free from possessiveness, even in the midst of those who would take everything. Never possessing anything, how wonderful our lives become. Nourished by the same food of joy as the gods of light. Do you remember that story when Ryokan comes back? I think it's Ryokan. He comes back to his cabin and there's been a thief has taken what little he has. But the window is there and the full moon is rising, and he says, his reaction is just, oh, look, the thief didn't take the moon. That wonderful, you can see here that the basis for that that energy, never free from possessiveness, even in the midst of those who would take everything. So that you see that, actually read a lot of Ryokan, you see that in many places, where in the moment, just immediately, he turns toward joy. Even with grief, in situations of grief, in the poem you'll see him turning toward joy. In the Buddha's discourse on goodwill, the ending, of course, is, may all beings everywhere, seen and unseen, dwelling far off or nearby, being or waiting to become, may all be filled with lasting joy. So that's what we're up to when we're cultivating sympathetic joy. That's what we're up to, is to begin to train. And it's quite wonderful to have the notion, oh, we could train in this kind of feeling too. Just as we train in loving kindness by first thinking of a benefactor, so we get that feeling, so it's easy, somebody whose goodness is evident to us. And then we say the phrases, we repeat the phrases, and then little by little we move along. And just as with compassion, we choose first a being or group of beings that we know and care about and also know who, that are suffering in some way, and thus get the flavor of the feeling of compassion, and then go through ourselves and other people training and developing through repetition of the phrases and feeling the feeling and visualization and a lot of repetition. We cultivate compassion. So too, we can work with sympathetic joy. But as I said, the first, of course, to know that all of the time that we spend developing loving kindness and compassion, we are in a not surface way, but we are also developing the potential for sympathetic joy. And the more we're doing our mindfulness practice and just basically letting go of the story of me, we are also developing the capacity for joy to arise. So that even just the basic practice, we are mindful of breath sensations, then the mind wanders off, and of course it wanders off into a story where we are the star, right? We don't, you know, you don't have my daydreams, I don't have your daydreams. Even my worries relate to me, you know, or someone I care about. But, you know, we're the hero or the heroine of the story. So, but then in that moment, we wake up and there is such power in the moment that this simple practice, maybe not easy, but simple, that we see the story and we let it go. It wants to keep going, you know. Some of them are really juicy. My favorite is winning the lottery, and what groups I would give all the money to. I'm sure a lot of you have that. Groups and friends and relatives. So it's so tempting, whatever the story, the daydream is. But then we remember, oh, I'm meditating. So in that moment, it's our renunciation practice. We're not monastics, but that's it. We're continually renouncing the story of me. And we go back to something, let's face it, it's not all that interesting. It can be when we get really concentrated, but the breath is fairly neutral. It doesn't have all that dramatic a plot line or anything like that. So to let go of that pull toward either it's some wonderful story or it's some horrible story, but it's still the story about myself. It's my narrative. And to let that go and go back to breath. Each time we do that, we're just a little bit unsticking this sticky, tight self. We're taking, you know, maybe one little molecule of it away again and again and again and again. And we are also, because we're doing that, we're creating the possibility, the opportunity for this joy to shine through, because that's what we are. Without the self, without the story, we're joy arising in each moment. We're an awareness, and that awareness is full of joy. So all of our practices are helping that to proceed. But then also we can intentionally cultivate joy. And the technique, of course, as we did just a little bit, is to imagine someone we care about a lot and who is having some sort of success. So people generally who have children or grandchildren, nieces, nephews, some like that, it makes it easy. So start with someone really easy. Somebody, you know, a friend who's a co-worker, and there's only one promotion, we're both in line for it, that'd be a little harder. Because while you want to be happy for your friend, if your friend gets the promotion, it means you didn't. So that begins to be the stretch. But starting with finding, if you can, some being in that description, someone you care about enough that when you hear of their success, their happiness, their joy, no jealousy, no competition, none of that arises. You just feel happy for them. And then, if you can't find anyone like that, just think, as I say, babies, puppies, kittens, flowers, daffodils particularly seem to just shout joy. Maybe it's because it's raining and they're shouting through the rain. But that's why we give flowers, right? Because people just joy. It's just that there's nothing else has to happen. You hand someone flowers, they smile. So, and babies, of course, in the grocery store, you know, when you come across a happy baby, you just feel happy. And it's okay, you know, perfect strangers, they don't mind if you smile at their baby. And the baby loves it, you know, they wave their little fists and giggle or something. So it's pure delight, just the delight of life. And we rarely feel jealous or in competition with the baby. So that's helpful as well. Or, of course, puppies. That's why we end up with, with owning dogs and kittens, because that joy, the tiny ones, such joy just at their existence. So you can use that, one of those beings also, as your first category when doing the meditation. And then if it's appropriate, the phrase might be, may your success continue, may your happiness continue. Or maybe it would be more appropriate to just say, may joy never leave you. May joy never leave you, like a little baby or something. So you begin to feel that it's kind of glee. It's just this beautiful, happy, happy heart. I was once in a group, a different kind of training many years ago, but one aspect of it was that we were learning how to develop and express pure emotion. And we had difficult emotions, and then we had love and joy. And one of the young people, there was a young man in the group that just the word joy, how to feel joy, just not a clue. So you could imagine what kind of childhood that young man probably had had. So the man who was teaching the group, talking to him, trying to figure it out, finally he gets this light bulb glint in his eye, and he says, everybody up, and we all get off our seats. And the whole group, he says, all right, now you're going to jump for joy. So we're all there, this range of ages of people, and we're just jumping for joy all around him, until finally he remembered somehow. It's like it seemed he must have just reached way back into his childhood. And he started jumping too, and he could feel joy. So that was amazing. That was to see that there are certainly many people walking around in the world who just have lost touch with that kind of feeling due to the difficulty in their lives. And so for some of us, it might take some training. That we can do that with this practice. In regard to oneself, we don't, like with compassion, we can direct it toward our own pain and suffering and say, may I be free of suffering. Or certainly with loving kindness, we direct it toward ourselves, and I highly recommend you do that a lot, and then a lot more. You know, if you think you're spending too much time doing loving kindness for yourself, double it. it can't hurt. It can only help you and all sentient beings, particularly because, as I've mentioned, you know, the Buddha says a being who truly loves themselves will never harm another. Therefore, all the time that we spend cultivating loving kindness toward ourselves, has benefit for others. But for the joy, we don't meditate, we don't say, may joy never leave me. Although occasionally something really wonderful has happened, I found my mind saying, yahoo, may joy never leave me. But instead, we reflect on gratitude. We reflect on what we are grateful for. Something, you know, like the elbows connected to the arm bone connected to the wrist bone. Somehow, the gratefulness is connected to joy, and joy to gratefulness. And I remember my first exposure to that notion was Brother David Stendelrath's book called Gratefulness, the Heart of Prayer. He's a Catholic brother who is also a lifetime Zen practitioner. And in that, he was talking about how people think that people who experience a lot of joy, they notice that they also have a lot of gratitude. And people who haven't really looked into it think that the people are so grateful because their lives are just filled with joy. Which one would feel grateful if your life is full of joy? But he said it actually it's worked the other way, that they are so, that because they have become so grateful, because they practice gratitude and gratefulness, joy is the result of that. So for ourselves, if we're having difficulty relating to joy, cultivating joy, then we should try to focus, make a little practice, or a big practice, of thoughts of gratitude and gratefulness. Just that list, what we're grateful for. Really bringing attention and awareness to what we're grateful for. And certainly, of course, just the fortune of being able to do spiritual practice and study the Dharma and practice the Dharma is very high on the list. Precious human birth, free and well-favored, that we have the time and so forth, and the inclination. You know, we may have relatives who also would have the time, but no inclination. So that good fortune, we can be tremendously grateful for that. And then just having some fun with making lists, gratitude. One person recently said that a relative of hers was challenging her, saying that if you have gratefulness, you have to have someone to be grateful to. And so that was his argument for not feeling it, because you have to have someone grateful to. So I looked at her, and the immediate thought I had, well, just tell him to thank goodness. So, and in a way, I mean, it's such an ordinary phrase, you know, thank goodness. But when you think about it, that's actually, I mean, given the world, the situation of the world, the vicissitudes of dukkha in the world, thank goodness. Just grateful for the goodness of people. Grateful for others' goodness. Grateful for hearing about it. In the list of news, you know, it's so wonderful every time to turn on the radio, the list of news when something really happy has happened, like they found that lost Cub Scout, Boy Scout camper. It's just like, yahoo! So thank goodness. And that, just the cultivation, spending time feeling the feeling of gratefulness, allows us to see that it is really a nearby cousin of joy. So again, as you know, you have come to hear me, my emphasis is always on, let's just try this out experientially. Let's do the practices and then see how it goes, see what happens. Let's have these experiences. Take on the recommendations, do it and try it out. And so experimenting with gratefulness and really allowing ourselves to spend some time with it, and as I said, even just thanking goodness, we begin to feel, oh yeah, this is really close. This is a cousin of joy. This will give rise to joy. And of course, the things that our enemies of it are envy, jealousy, avarice. It's interesting, avarice. Because joy in another's joy, we have so many times called sympathetic joy, but I think that phrase appreciative joy a little bit clearer. We use both, why not? But appreciating that someone else had good fortune and happiness. You can see right then it loosens than any knot of avarice. Because our tendency is to have the notion that there's only so much happiness that would go around, and if someone else gets it, then we won't have any. So, and that, of course, is coming from fear, with the little seasoning of greed and insecurity and so forth. So, to be willing to appreciate the joy of others, to give them their happiness and celebrate it, loosens that feeling of I have to get mine. And then oddly and wonderfully paradoxically, in the way of this practice, what we end up with is more happiness by cultivating appreciative joy. We end up with by cultivating compassion, we also feel more happier, more content, more connected. Loving kindness brings us happiness by having loving kindness for others. So the self doesn't want to do it. The self is fearful, the little ego, self-centered suffering. But if we can coax it, to do the practices and try it out. What is that? Random acts of kindness. those sorts of things. Then we see experientially. You know, we don't have to believe this. We just try it out and we see, oh, this works. This does bring happiness. And to hold those moments also in our memory to help us cultivate is skillful as well. I think I've told some of you the story. I knew a little boy. I don't know him anymore. It was in New England when I lived there. But when I knew him, he was 3 years old, and his name was Bodie. And he had this most wonderful, joyful energy, as so many children that age have. And I remember I was sitting in the kitchen, and it was kind of a lackadaisical supper that people who lived in this house were having in various rooms of the house. And Bodhi's wandering around and came in, and there were some chips. It must have been, you know, chips and salsa something. And so he kind of got this excited look, and he asked if he could have some. So I handed him the bag, and he was lifting them out, and he just took a bite of one. And then he looked at me and he said, "How about you?" And held them back to me. And I just, that moment, just this pure generosity of spirit, appreciative joy, "How about you?" You know, and it was so, I still remember it, because just immediately shifting his focus away from himself. You know, came in, he wanted chips. But then immediately looking up, seeing another person, and, "How about you?" And I thought, and I have from then on remembered that moment of that young person's expression, again, for appreciative joy, generosity of heart, generosity of spirit, the willingness to give others joy and happiness and to celebrate their success, their joy, and their happiness. And what we find out is it's just a lot of fun. It's just a lot of fun. That's why we have birthday parties, right? So play around with it, enjoy it. Its allies, of course, loving kindness and compassion and gratitude, and this delighting, taking delight in other people. And all of this gladdens the mind. And we could really use some gladdening of our minds, right, and our hearts. So there's a little bit, you know, people might say, oh, well, it seems very Pollyannish, but that's sort of the near enemy of it, some kind of syrupy, insincere, possibly brown-nosing sort of emotion, I don't know. But that's just in the neighborhood, but not there. And if you keep going, you will find this pure joy, just pure delight. And of course, we all have memories of at least one baby somewhere in our lives, or we can run into one at the grocery store. That glee, that just delight at living, joy to be alive, or the little puppies as well. So this will combine with the others. It will strengthen the others, and the others will strengthen loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy. And then finally, another aspect that will also strengthen your capacity to feel any of these, but oddly enough, particularly sympathetic joy, appreciative joy, is this practice of sharing merit. So, and that's partly because of the karmic potency of these practices that we do. I mean, maybe after, you know, we've schlepped in and out of retreats year after year, or come to our sitting groups and so forth, and so it may get to feel a bit ordinary, and it certainly can be a struggle because the mind just keeps wandering off in all kinds of wacky directions. But it's good to remember how precious these practices are, how unusual it is that a group of people come together, again, because you have such wonderful organizations, SIMS, with all of these volunteers and board members, and I mean, you got this amazing thing going here. So it might begin to seem like this is happening in most cities, let's say. But it's not. I mean, you really have something, a huge blessing here and a uniqueness. So to remember that, and then to realize the power and the potency of mindfulness practice, of the practices of loving kindness, of insight practices and wisdom. If it weren't so rare, I mean, if it were just an ordinary thing, there'd be a lot more enlightened people walking around, right? But clearly, there aren't. So it's pretty rare. So to be aware of that, and then additionally, to dedicate the merit, the benefit that we all get from doing these practices, because there is tremendous, powerful karmic merit that we get just from trying to do the practices. I mean, as Pema Chodron said, she wants to ask Trungpa Rinpoche, like she does certain dedication for the meal. She says, and then I just eat my meal in complete unconsciousness, and then at the end I dedicate the merit again. How could that be any benefit? And he said, it's just you form the intention at the beginning, you dedicate it at the end. The middle doesn't matter, you know. It'd be great if the whole meal was mindful, but it's really this power of this intention, these actions with intention. So we get merit from doing these practices, and then we dedicate it for the sake of all beings everywhere. And what happens, we think again, our minds might think, oh, then I'll run out of merit if I give it all away. But actually, giving it away multiplies it even more. So, because of the gesture of being willing to give it to all beings. So then this powerful, of any act of generosity has wonderful benefit, wonderful karma, will increase the possibility of feeling loving kindness, compassion, and even sympathetic joy. But the dedication of merit will really increase the possibility, the sort of the potency of the arising of appreciative joy. So that's, I mean, it's all good, right? At the end of any, you can, we can dedicate the merit of any good thing at the end of it. Just if there, I sometimes, particularly at the end of a really hard day, will say, or a really hard hour, will say, ah, if there was any merit in this day that I generated, may it benefit all beings. So we can at any time dedicate any goodness, or even the possibility of goodness. But then also at the end of meditation sessions and practice sessions, to dedicate the merit or the benefit of that for the sake of all beings. We're really a potent, powerful fertilizer for the seeds of sympathetic joy, appreciative joy to arise. So I want to read you, read to you in closing, this wonderful verse that I found as a blessing and healing prayer that I think it's probably from the Tibetan tradition. It's from the internet tradition. The lineage of 1 o'clock in the morning, clicking something and saying, whoa, is that a great prayer or what? 21st century is strange but wonderful, isn't it? So to me, it really expresses the energy of mudita and of all these Brahmaviharas and the conviction of the power of these practices. Just as the soft rains fill the streams, pour into the rivers, and join together in the oceans, so may the power of every moment of your goodness flow forth to awaken and heal all beings, those here now, those gone before, those yet to come. By the power of every moment of your goodness, may your heart's wishes be soon fulfilled as completely shining as the bright full moon, as magically as by a wish-fulfilling gem. By the power of every moment of your goodness, may all dangers be averted and all diseases be gone. May no obstacle come across your way. May you enjoy fulfillment and long life. For all in whose heart dwells respect, who follow the wisdom and the compassion of the way, may their lives prosper in the four blessings of old age, equanimity, happiness, and strength. The thing about that verse that makes it a Buddhist verse is it's not just may you be blessed, which is a nice thing to wish, but there's a vow phrase there that says by the power of every moment of your goodness, which is particularly a Buddhist view, and that is that every moment of goodness that you do has tremendous power. And so the verse, the prayer, the blessing is saying, by the power of something very, very real, may this happen and that happen. So it's a truth vow, really. It's a truth wish, a truth blessing, a truth vow, saying every moment of your goodness has tremendous power, and by that power may your heart's wishes soon be fulfilled. So then mudita comes, you know, and may this happen, and may particularly your goodness flow forth in a way that will awaken and heal all beings, those here now, those gone before, and those yet to come. So I think we're at time. We have a little time for questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Alrighty, any question? Yes.
Do you have copies of that?
I have a copy of it, and you can have it. I'll try to remember to bring more next time. Okay, but you get this one. Is there anybody here, by the way, who would really love to have a copy of the Loving Kindness book and can't afford it? Is there anybody? Well, if there is anybody here, if you want to remain anonymous, just come up. You can have this one. Okay.
Jude?
Yeah.
We had two copies of that in the Sims library.
Good.
They were checked out but never returned.
Okay, this one is going to the library. And if there is anybody here who would like a copy and doesn't have one, let me know and I'll bring one for you next week. Who can't afford one? But meanwhile, this one goes to the library. Okay, good. Yay! Aren't we having fun?
I hope this question will make sense, but when you told the story about the little boy, Bodhi,
yeah.
So I mean, you know, my daughter,
mm-hmm.
who's 2.5, and she does that kind of thing all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, our family's in a kind of a struggle with time right now, and I just, wanted her to keep that.
Yeah. Maybe, and since I haven't had children, you would be much more, but I could make a suggestion and you could be the one to try it out. See if you can start to create some silly games, but fun games, where that energy is celebrated. For example, everybody serves somebody else in the family, like dinner, the dinner bowls go down, and then I'm going to get your plate, and you're going to get my plate. And then somebody else says, oh, and be sure and give her some corn, because she likes corn. And, oh, don't give so-and-so peas, they don't like peas. So it's this really kind of, and a little bit chaotic, because mm-hmm. joy is a little kind of chaotic, but this energy of generosity of spirit, turning it into little games like that. Or, like if there are household chores, like occasionally somebody, and you might start it, but then your little two-year-old, it'll be so much fun. Or you could say to her, everybody's supposed to make their bed every day, but let's you and I make everybody else's bed.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of thing. I mean, it's a little bit like pay it forward, or when I lived in California, sometimes somebody would start paying the Golden Gate Bridge fee for the person behind them, and it would go down like that. So create whatever little games like that. Yeah, it was really sweet. And then it had to stop somewhere where somebody really needed the money, but that was okay too. You know, it's like, great, I don't have to pay. But just conjure up, because you know your family and you know the situations.
Yeah.
But things that don't take much time, but are really fun, and the idea of doing it for someone else,
mm-hmm.
So that it's associated with a lot of fun and kind of a little. It's a little bit of a glee, isn't it? Mm-hmm. A kind of a sense of just pure, good-natured, good-hearted glee,
yeah.
when you're able to do that for somebody. Little gifts, leaving the people in the family notes,
mm-hmm.
putting notes on the mirror with shaving cream. Like if you're in the, and then you know the next person is going to come in, so you just put a heart with shaving cream or soap or something like that. Just little things like that, so that it becomes a game and a natural expression to do it a lot. And then people, it's so much fun that I think she'll get it, and then
right.
she'll have her own ideas.
But I just think, you know, they're so perfect.
Yes.
And then
yeah.
there's the whole world. And
yeah.
all the things
yeah.
that happen
yeah.
in the world.
Yeah. So if you can get that in the spirit of that, that can be helpful. Or and then things that like maybe you don't want to do this with spilled milk, but like, you know how when somebody spills something and then tension happens. So maybe it's a bowl of popcorn. Say everybody's got popcorn and she spills hers. just throw yours, and then everybody else will throw theirs, and then there'll be popcorn everywhere. That, again, that sense of the joy is more important than anything else. So. I'm going to wreak the hat off. So you got the feel, right? Let me know how it goes. Could be fun. So, anybody else? Oh, this is great. All righty. Thanks so much.